This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, performed by Bonnie Turpin. Part 1. When it happens. 1. I shouldn't have come to this party. I'm not even sure I belong at this party. That's not on some bougie shit either. There are just some places where it's not enough to be me. Either version of me. Big D's spring break party is one of those places. I squeeze through sweaty bodies and follow Kenya, her curls bouncing past her shoulders. A haze lingers over the room, smelling like weed, and music rattles the floor. Some rapper calls out for everybody to nay-nay, followed by a bunch of haze as people launch into their own versions. Kenya holds up her cup and dances her way through the crowd. Between the headache from the loud-ass music and the nausea from the weed odor, I'll be amazed if I cross the room without spilling my drink. We break out the crowd. Big D's house is packed wall to wall. I've always heard that everybody and their mama comes to his spring break parties. Well, everybody except me. But damn, I didn't know it would be this many people. Girls wear their hair colored, curled, laid and slayed. Got me feeling basic as hell with my ponytail. Guys in their freshest kicks and sagging pants grind so close to girls they just about need condoms. My nana likes to say that spring brings love. Spring in Garden Heights doesn't always bring love, but it promises babies in the winter. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of them are conceived the night of Big D's party. He always has it on the Friday of spring break because you need Saturday to recover and Sunday to repent. "Stop following me and go dance, star," Kenya says. "People already say you think you all that." I didn't know so many mind readers lived in Garden Heights, or that people know me as anything other than Big Mav's daughter who works in the store. I sip my drink and spit it back out. I knew there would be more than Hawaiian punch in it, but this is way stronger than I'm used to. They shouldn't even call it punch, just straight up liquor. I put it on the coffee table and say, "Folks kill me thinking they know what I think." "Hey, I'm just saying, you act like you don't know nobody 'cause you go to that school." I've been hearing that for 6 years, ever since my parents put me in Williamson Prep. "Whatever," I mumble. "And it wouldn't kill you not to dress like..." She turns up her nose as she looks from my sneakers to my oversized hoodie. "That? Ain't that my brother's hoodie?" Our brother's hoodie. Kenya and I share an older brother, 7. But she and I aren't related. Her mama is 7's mama, and my dad is 7's dad. Crazy, I know. "Yeah, it's his." "Figures. You know what else people saying, too? Got folks thinking you're my girlfriend." Do I look like I care what people think? "No, and that's the problem." "Whatever." If I'd known following her to this party meant she'd be on some extreme makeover, star edition mess, I would have stayed home and watched Fresh Prince reruns. My Jordans are comfortable, and damn, they're new. That's more than some people can say. The hoodie's way too big, but I like it that way. Plus, if I pull it over my nose, I can't smell the weed. "Well, I ain't babysitting you all night, so you better do something," Kenya says and scopes the room. Kenya could be a model, if I'm completely honest. She's got flawless dark brown skin. I don't think she ever gets a pimple. Slanted brown eyes and long eyelashes that aren't store-bought. She's the perfect height for modeling, too. but a little thicker than those toothpicks on the runway. She never wears the same outfit twice. Her daddy, King, makes sure of that. Kenya is about the only person I hang out with in Garden Heights. It's hard to make friends when you go to a school that's 45 minutes away and you're a latchkey kid who's only seen at her family store. It's easy to hang out with Kenya because of our connection to Seven. She's messy as hell sometimes, though. Always fighting somebody and quick to say her daddy will whoop somebody's ass. Yeah, it's true, but I wish she'd stop picking fights so she can use her trump card. Hell, I could use mine, too. Everybody knows you don't mess with my dad, Big Mav, and you definitely don't mess with his kids. Still, you don't see me going around starting shit. Like at Big D's party, Kenya is giving Dinesia Allen some serious stank eye. I don't remember much about Dinesia, but I remember that she and Kenya haven't liked each other since fourth grade. Tonight, Dinesia's dancing with some guy halfway across the room and paying no attention to Kenya. But no matter where we move, Kenya spots Dinesia and glares at her. And the thing about the stank eye is at some point you feel it on you, inviting you to kick some ass or have your ass kicked. "Oh, I can't stand her," Kenya seeds. "The other day, we were in line in the cafeteria, right? And she behind me talking out the side of her neck. She didn't use my name, but I know she was talking about me, saying I tried to get with Devontae." "For real?" I say what I'm supposed to. "Uh-huh, I don't want him." "I know. Honestly, I don't know who Devontae is. So what did you do?" "What you think I did? I turned around and asked if she had a problem with me. Old Trick gonna say, I wasn't even talking about you. Knowing she was. You're so lucky you go to that white people school and don't have to deal with hoes like that." Ain't this some shit? Not even 5 minutes ago, I was stuck up because I go to Williamson. Now I'm lucky? Trust me, my school has hoes too. Hold'em is universal. "Watch, we gonna handle her tonight." Kenya's stank eye reaches its highest level of stank. Dinesia feels its sting and looks right at Kenya. "Uh-huh," Kenya confirms, like Dinesia hears her. "Watch." "Hold up, we? That's why you begged me to come to this party? So you can have a tag team partner?" She has the nerve to look offended. "It ain't like you had nothing else to do. Or anybody else to hang out with. I'm doing your ass a favor." "Really, Kenya? You do know I have friends, right?" She rolls her eyes, hard. Only the whites are visible for a few seconds. "Them little bougie girls from your school don't count." "They're not bougie, and they do count, I think. Maya and I are cool. Not sure what's up with me and Haley lately. And honestly, if pulling me into a fight is your way of helping my social life, I'm good. God damn, it's always some drama with you." "Please, Star." She stretches the please extra long. Too long. "This is what I'm thinking. We wait until she get away from Devontae, right? And then we..." My phone vibrates against my thigh and I glance at the screen. Since I've ignored his calls, Chris texts me instead. "Can we talk? I didn't mean for it to go like that." Of course he didn't. He meant for it to go a whole different way yesterday, which is the problem. I slip the phone in my pocket. I'm not sure what I want to say, but I'd rather deal with him later. "Kenya!" somebody shouts. This big light-skinned girl with bone-straight hair moves through the crowd toward us. A tall boy with a black and blonde frohawk follows her. They both give Kenya hugs and talk about how cute she looks. I'm not even here.
"Why you ain't tell me you was coming?"
the girl says and sticks her thumb in her mouth. She's got an overbite from doing that, too.
"You could have rode with us."
"Nah, girl, I had to go get Star," Kenya says. "We walked here together." That's when they notice me, standing not even half a foot from Kenya. The guy squints as he gives me a quick once-over. He frowns for a hot second, but I notice it.
Ain't you Big Mav's daughter who work in the store?
See? People act like that's the name on my birth certificate. Yeah, that's me.
Oh, the girl says. I knew you looked familiar. We were in third grade together, Miss Bridges' class. I sat behind you.
Oh, I know this is the moment I'm supposed to remember her, but I don't. I guess Kenya was right. I really don't know anybody. Their faces are familiar, but you don't get names and life stories when you're bagging folks' groceries. I can lie, though. Yeah, I remember you.
Girl, quit lying, the guy says. You know you don't know her ass.
Why you always lying?
Kenya and the girl sing together. The guy joins in, and they all bust out laughing.
Bianca and Chance, be nice, Kenya says. This star's first party. Her folks don't let her go nowhere.
I cut her a side eye. I go to parties, Kenya.
Have y'all seen her at any parties around here? Kenya asks them.
Nope.
Point made. And before you say it, little lame white kid suburb parties don't count.
Chance and Bianca snicker. Damn, I wish this hoodie could swallow me up somehow.
I bet they be doing Molly and shit, don't they?
Chance asks me.
White kids love popping pills.
And listening to Taylor Swift,
Bianca adds, talking around her thumb. Okay, that's somewhat true, but I'm not telling them that.
Nah, actually, their parties are pretty dope, I say. One time this boy had J. Cole perform at his birthday party.
Damn, for real? Chance asks. Shit. Bitch, next time invite me. I'll party with them white kids.
Anyway, Kenya says loudly, we were talking about running up on Danasia. Bitch over there dancing with Devontae.
Oh, trick, Bianca says. You know she been running her mouth about you, right?
I was in Mr. Donald's class last week when Aaliyah told me.
Chance rolls his eyes.
Ugh, Mr. Donald.
You just mad he threw you out, Kenya says.
Hell yes.
Anyway, Aaliyah told me, Bianca begins.
I get lost again as classmates and teachers that I don't know are discussed. I can't say anything. Doesn't matter, though. I'm invisible. I feel like that a lot around here. In the middle of them complaining about Danasia and their teachers, Kenya says something about getting another drink, and the three of them walk off without me. Suddenly, I'm Eve in the garden after she ate the fruit. It's like I realize I'm naked. I'm by myself at a party I'm not even supposed to be at, where I barely know anybody, and the person I do know just left me hanging. Kenya begged me to come to this party for weeks. I knew I'd be uncomfortable as hell, but every time I told Kenya no, she said I act like I'm too good for a garden party. I got tired of hearing that shit and decided to prove her wrong. Problem is, it would have taken Black Jesus to convince my parents to let me come. Now Black Jesus will have to save me if they find out I'm here. People glance over at me with that, "Who is this chick standing against the wall by herself like an idiot?" look. I slip my hands into my pockets. As long as I play it cool and keep to myself, I should be fine. The ironic thing is, though, at Williamson, I don't have to play it cool. I'm cool by default because I'm one of the only Black kids there. I have to earn coolness in Garden Heights, and that's more difficult than buying retro Jordans on release day. Funny how it works with white kids, though. It's dope to be Black until it's hard to be Black.
Star,
a familiar voice says. The sea of people parts for him like he's a brown-skinned Moses. Guys give him daps and girls crane their necks to look at him. He smiles at me, and his dimples ruin any G persona he has. Khalil is fine, no other way of putting it, and I used to take baths with him. Not like that, But way back in the day when we would giggle because he had a wee-wee and I had what his grandma called a wee-ha. I swear it wasn't perverted, though. He hugs me, smelling like soap and baby powder.
What's up, girl? Ain't seen you in a minute.
He lets me go.
You don't text nobody, nothing. Where you been?
School and the basketball team keep me busy, I say. But I'm always at the store. You're the one nobody sees anymore. His dimples disappear. He wipes his nose like he always does before a lie.
I've been busy.
Obviously. The brand new Jordans, the crisp white tee, the diamonds in his ears. When you grow up in Garden Heights, you know what busy really means.
Fuck.
I wish he wasn't that kind of busy, though. I don't know if I want to tear up or smack him. But the way Khalil looks at me with those hazel eyes makes it hard to be upset. I feel like I'm 10 again, standing in the basement of Christ Temple Church, having my first kiss with him at Vacation Bible School. Suddenly I remember I'm in a hoodie, looking a straight-up mess. And that I actually have a boyfriend. I might not be answering Chris's calls or texts right now, but he's still mine, and I want to keep it that way. How's your grandma? I ask. And Cameron?
They aight. Grandma's sick, though.
Khalil sips from his cup.
Doctor says she got cancer or whatever.
Damn. Sorry, Kay.
Yeah, she taking chemo. She only worried about getting a wig, though.
He gives a weak laugh that doesn't show his dimples.
She'll be aight.
It's a prayer more than a prophecy. Is your mama helping with Cameron?
Good old Star. Always looking for the best in people. You know she ain't helping.
Hey, it was just a question. She came in the store the other day. She looks better.
For now, says Khalil. She claims she trying to get clean, but it's the usual. She'll go clean a few weeks, decide she wants one more hit, then be back at it. But like I said, I'm good. Cameron's good. Grandma's good. He shrugs. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I say. But I remember the nights I spent with Khalil on his porch, waiting for his mama to come home. Whether he likes it or not, she matters to him, too. The music changes, and Drake raps from the speakers. I nod to the beat and rap along under my breath. Everybody on the dance floor yells out, "The started from the bottom, now we're here" part. Some days we are at the bottom in Garden Heights. But we still share the feeling that, damn, it could be worse. Khalil is watching me. A smile tries to form on his lips, but he shakes his head.
Can't believe you still love whiny-ass Drake.
I gape at him. Leave my husband alone.
Your corny husband. Baby, you my everything. You all I ever wanted.
Khalil sings in a whiny voice. I push him with my shoulder and he laughs, his drink splashing over the sides of the cup.
You know that's what he sounds like.
I flip him off. He puckers his lips and makes a kissing sound. All these months apart, and we've fallen back into normal like it's nothing. Khalil grabs a napkin from the coffee table and wipes drink off his Jordans, the three retros. They came out a few years ago, but I swear those things are so fresh. They cost about $300, and that's if you find somebody on eBay who goes easy. Chris did. I got mine for a steal at $150, but I wear kid sizes. Thanks to my small feet, Chris and I can match our sneakers. Yes, we're that couple. Shit, we're fly, though. If he can stop doing stupid stuff, we'll really be good. I like the kicks, I tell Khalil.
Thanks.
He scrubs the shoes with his napkin. I cringe. With each hard rub, the shoes cry for my help. No lie, every time a sneaker is cleaned improperly, a kitten dies.
Khalil, I say, 1 second away from snatching that napkin. Either wipe gently back and forth or dab. Don't scrub. For real.
He looks up at me smirking.
Okay, Miss Sneakerhead.
And thank Black Jesus, he dabs.
Since you made me spill my drink on them, I ought to make you clean them.
It'll cost you $60.
$60?
He shouts, straightening up.
Hell yeah, and it would be $80 if they had icy soles.
Clear bottoms are a bitch to clean.
Cleaning kits aren't cheap. Besides, you're obviously making big money if you can buy those.
Khalil sips his drink like I didn't say anything, mutters, damn, this shit's strong, and sets the cup on the coffee table.
Hey, tell your pops I need to holler at him soon. Some stuff going down that I need to talk to him about.
What kind of stuff?
Grown folks' business.
Yeah, 'cause you're so grown.
5 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days older than you.
He winks.
I ain't forgot.
A commotion stirs in the middle of the dance floor. Voices argue louder than the music. Cuss words fly left and right. My first thought, Kenya walked up on Dinesha like she promised. But the voices are deeper than theirs.
Pop!
A shot rings out. I duck.
Pop!
A second shot. The crowd stampedes toward the door, which leads to more cussing and fighting since it's impossible for everybody to get out at once. Khalil grabs my hand.
Come on.
There are way too many people and way too much curly hair for me to catch a glimpse of Kenya.
But Kenya...
Forget her. Let's go.
He pulls me through the crowd, shoving people out our way and stepping on shoes. That alone could get us some bullets. I look for Kenya among the panicked faces, but still no sign of her. I don't try to see who got shot or who did it. You can't snitch if you don't know anything. Cars speed away outside, and people run into the night in any direction where shots aren't firing off. Khalil leads me to a Chevy Impala parked under a dim streetlight. He pushes me in through the driver's side, and I climb into the passenger seat. We screech off, leaving chaos in the rearview mirror.
Always some shit, he mumbles. Can't have a party without somebody getting shot.
He sounds like my parents. That's exactly why they don't let me go nowhere, as Kenya puts it. At least not around Garden Heights. I send Kenya a text, hoping she's all right. Doubt those bullets were meant for her, but bullets go where they want to go. Kenya texts back kind of quick.
I'm fine. I see that bitch, though, about to handle her ass. Where you at?
Is this chick for real? We just ran for our lives, and she's ready to fight?
I don't even answer that dumb shit. Khalil's Impala is nice, not all flashy like some guys' cars. I didn't see any rims before I got in, and the front seat has cracks in the leather. But the interior is a tacky lime green, so it's been customized at some point. I pick at a crack in the seat.
Who you think got shot?
Khalil gets his hairbrush out the compartment on the door.
Probably a king lord,
he says, brushing the sides of his fade.
Some garden disciples came in when I got there. Something was bound to pop off.
I nod. Garden Heights has been a battlefield for the past 2 months over some stupid territory wars. I was born a queen, 'cause Daddy used to be a king lord. But when he left the game, my street royalty status ended. But even if I'd grown up in it, I wouldn't understand fighting over streets nobody owns. Khalil drops the brush in the door and cranks up his stereo, blasting an old rap song Daddy has played a million times. I frown.
Why you always listening to that old stuff?
Man, get out of here. Tupac was the truth.
Yeah, 20 years ago.
Nah, even now. Like, check this.
He points at me, which means he's about to go into one of his Khalil philosophical moments.
Pac said Thug Life stood for the hate you give little infants fucks everybody.
I raised my eyebrows.
What? Listen. The hate you, the letter U, give little infants fucks everybody. THUGLIFE. Meaning what society gives us as youth, it bites them in the ass when we wild out. Get it?
Damn. Yeah.
See? Told you he was relevant.
He nods to the beat and raps along. But now I'm wondering what he's doing to fuck everybody. As much as I think I know, I hope I'm wrong. I need to hear it from him.
So why have you really been busy?
I ask. A few months ago, Daddy said you quit the store. I haven't seen you since.
He scoots closer to the steering wheel. Where you want me to take you? Your house or the store?
Khalil.
Your house or the store?
If you're selling that stuff.
Mind your business, Star. Don't worry about me. I'm doing what I gotta do.
Bullshit. You know my dad would help you out.
He wipes his nose before his lie. I don't need help from nobody, okay? And that little minimum wage job your pops gave me didn't make nothing happen. I got tired of choosing between lights and food.
I thought your grandma was working.
She was. When she got sick, them clowns at the hospital claimed they'd work with her. 2 months later, she wasn't pulling her load on the job, because when you're going through chemo, you can't pull big-ass garbage bins around. They fired her.
He shakes his head.
Funny, huh? The hospital fired her, because she was sick.
It's silent in the Impala, except for Tupac asking, who do you believe in? I don't know. My phone vibrates again. Probably either Chris asking for forgiveness or Kenya asking for backup against Dinesia. Instead, my big brother's all caps texts appear on the screen. I don't know why he does that. He probably thinks it intimidates me. Really, it annoys the hell out of me.
Where are you? You and Kenya better not be at that party. I heard somebody got shot.
The only thing worse than protective parents is protective older brothers. Even Black Jesus can't save me from Seven. Khalil glances over at me.
Seven, huh?
How'd you know?
'Cause you always look like you want to punch something when he talks to you. Remember that time at your birthday party when he kept telling you what to wish for?
And I popped him in his mouth.
Then Natasha got mad at you for telling her boyfriend to shut up,
Khalil says, laughing. I roll my eyes. She got on my nerves with her crush on Seven. Half the time I thought she came over just to see him.
Nah, it was because you had the Harry Potter movies. What we used to call ourselves? The Hood Trio? Tighter than
the inside of Voldemort's nose. We were so silly for that.
I know, right? He says.
We laugh, but something's missing from it. Someone's missing from it. Natasha. Khalil looks at the road.
Crazy, it's been 6 years, you know?
A whoop-whoop sound startles us, and blue lights flash in the rearview mirror. 2. When I was 12, my parents had 2 talks with me. One was the usual birds and bees. Well, I didn't really get the usual version. My mom, Lisa, is a registered nurse, and she told me what went where and what didn't need to go here, there, or any damn where till I'm grown. Back then, I doubted anything was going anywhere anyway. While all the other girls sprouted breasts between 6th and 7th grade, my chest was as flat as my back. The other talk was about what to do if a cop stopped me. Mama fussed and told Daddy I was too young for that. He argued that I wasn't too young to get arrested or shot.
Star, you do whatever they tell you to do, he said, Keep your hands visible. Don't make any sudden moves. Only speak when they speak to you.
I knew it must have been serious. Daddy has the biggest mouth of anybody I know, and if he said to be quiet, I needed to be quiet. I hope somebody had the talk with Khalil. He cusses under his breath, turns Tupac down, and maneuvers the Impala to the side of the street. We're on Carnation, where most of the houses are abandoned and half the streetlights are busted. Nobody around but us and the cop. Khalil turns the ignition off.
Wonder what this fool wants.
The officer parks and puts his brights on. I blink to keep from being blinded. I remember something else Daddy said.
If you're with somebody, you better hope they don't have nothing on them, or both of y'all going down.
Kay, you don't have anything in the car, do you? I ask. He watches the cop in his side mirror.
Nah.
The officer approaches the driver's door and taps the window. Khalil cranks the handle to roll it down. As if we aren't blinded enough, the officer beams his flashlight in our faces.
License, registration, and proof of insurance.
Khalil breaks a rule. He doesn't do what the cop wants.
What you pull us over for? License, registration, and proof of insurance. I said what you pull us over for.
Khalil, I plead. Do what he said. Khalil groans and takes his wallet out. The officer follows his movements with the flashlight. My heart pounds loudly, but Daddy's instructions echo in my head.
Get a good look at the cop's face. If you can remember his badge number, that's even better.
With the flashlight following Khalil's hands, I make out the numbers on the badge. 115. He's white, mid-30s to early-40s, has a brown buzz cut and a thin scar over his top lip. Khalil hands the officer his papers and license. 115 looks over them.
Where are you two coming from tonight?
Nunya,
Khalil says, meaning none of your business.
What you pull me over for? Your taillight's broken. So are you gonna give me a ticket or what?
Khalil asks.
You know what? Get out the car, smart guy. Man, just give me my ticket. Get out the car! Hands up where I can see them.
Khalil gets out with his hands up. 115 yanks him by his arm and pins him against the back door. I fight to find my voice.
He didn't mean...
Hands on the dashboard!
The officer barks at me.
Don't move!
I do what he tells me, but my hands are shaking too much to be still. He pats Khalil down.
Okay, smart mouth. Let's see what we find on you today.
You ain't gonna find nothing,
Khalil says. 115 pats him down two more times. He turns up empty.
Stay here, he tells Khalil. And you.
He looks in the window at me.
Don't move.
I can't even nod. The officer walks back to his patrol car. My parents haven't raised me to fear the police, just to be smart around them. They told me it's not smart to move while a cop has his back to you. Khalil does. He comes to his door. It's not smart to make a sudden move. Khalil does. He opens the driver's door.
You okay, Star? Pow!
One. Khalil's body jerks. Blood splatters from his back. He holds on to the door to keep himself upright.
Pow!
Two. Khalil gasps.
Pow!
Three. Khalil looks at me. Stunned. He falls to the ground. I'm 10 again, watching Natasha drop. An ear-splitting scream emerges from my gut, explodes in my throat, and uses every inch of me
to be heard. Instinct says don't move, but everything else says check on Khalil. I jump out the Impala and rush around to the other side. Khalil stares at the sky as if he hopes to see God. His mouth is open like he wants to scream. I scream loud enough for the both of us. No, no, no! Is all I can say. Like I'm a year old and it's the only word I know. I'm not sure how I end up on the ground next to him. My mom once said that if someone gets shot, try to stop the bleeding. But there's so much blood. Too much blood. No! 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 Khalil doesn't move. He doesn't utter a word. He doesn't even look at me. His body stiffens, and he's gone. I hope he sees God. Someone else screams. I blink through my tears. Officer 115 yells at me, pointing the same gun he killed my friend with. I put my hands up. 3. They leave Khalil's body in the street like it's an exhibit. Police cars and ambulances flash all along Carnation Street. People stand off to the side trying to see what happened.
Damn, bruh, some guy says. They killed him.
The police tell the crowd to leave. Nobody listens. The paramedics can't do shit for Khalil, so they put me in the back of an ambulance like I need help. The bright lights spotlight me, and people crane their necks to get a peek. I don't feel special. I feel sick. The cops rummage through Khalil's car. I try to tell them to stop. Please cover his body. Please close his eyes. Please close his mouth. Get away from his car. Don't pick up his hairbrush. But the words never come out. 115 sits on the sidewalk with his face buried in his hands. Other officers pat his shoulder and tell him it'll be okay. They finally put a sheet over Khalil. He can't breathe under it. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I gasp and gasp. And gasp.
Star.
Brown eyes with long eyelashes appear in front of me. They're like mine. I couldn't say much to the cops, but I did manage to give them my parents' names and phone numbers.
Hey, Daddy says. Come on, let's go.
I open my mouth to respond. A sob comes out. Daddy is moved aside, and Mama wraps her arms around me. She rubs my back and speaks in hushed tones that tell lies. It's all right, baby. It's all right. We stay this way for a long time. Eventually, Daddy helps us out the ambulance. He wraps his arm around me like a shield against curious eyes and guides me to his Tahoe down the street. He drives. A street light flashes across his face, revealing how tight his jaw is set. His veins bulge along his bald head. Mama's wearing her scrubs, the ones with the rubber ducks on them. She did an extra shift at the emergency room tonight. She wipes her eyes a few times, probably thinking about Khalil, or how that could have been me lying in the street. My stomach twists. All of that blood. And it came out of him. Some of it is on my hands. On Seven's hoodie. On my sneakers. An hour ago we were laughing and catching up. Now his blood. Hot spit pools in my mouth. My stomach twists tighter. I gag. Mama glances at me in the rearview mirror. Maverick, pull over. I throw myself across the back seat and push the door open before the truck comes to a complete stop. It feels like everything in me is coming out, and all I can do is let it. Mama hops out and runs around to me. She holds my hair out the way and rubs my back. I'm so sorry, baby, she says. When we get home, she helps me undress. Seven's hoodie and my Jordans disappear into a black trash bag, and I never see them again. I sit in a tub of steaming water and scrub my hands raw to get Khalil's blood off. Daddy carries me to bed, and Mama brushes her fingers through my hair until I fall asleep. Nightmares wake me over and over again. Mama reminds me to breathe the same way she did before I outgrew asthma. I think she stays in my room the whole night, 'cause every time I wake up, she's sitting on my bed. But this time she's gone. My eyes strain against the brightness of my neon blue walls. The clock says it's 5 in the morning. My body's so used to waking up at 5, it doesn't care if it's Saturday morning or not. I stare at the glow-in-the-dark stars on my ceiling, trying to recap the night before. The party flashes in my mind. The fight. 1:15 pulling me and Khalil over. The first shot rings in my ears. The second. The third. I'm lying in bed. Khalil is lying in the county morgue. That's where Natasha ended up, too. It happened 6 years ago, but I still remember everything from that day. I was sweeping floors at our grocery store, saving up for my first pair of J's, when Natasha ran in. She was chunky, her mama told her it was baby fat, dark-skinned, and wore her hair in braids that always looked freshly done. I wanted braids like hers so bad.
Star, the hydrant on Elm Street busted, she said.
That was like saying we had a free water park. I remember looking at Daddy and pleading silently. He said I could go, as long as I promised to be back in an hour. I don't think I ever saw the water shoot as high as it did that day. Almost everybody in the neighborhood was there, too, just having fun. I was the only one who noticed the car at first. A tattooed arm stretched out the back window, holding a Glock. People ran. Not me, though. My feet became part of the sidewalk. Natasha was splashing in the water, all happy and stuff. Then, pow, pow, pow! I dove into a rose bush. By the time I got up, somebody was yelling, "Call 911!" At first I thought it was me, 'cause I had blood on my shirt. The thorns on the rose bush got me, that's all. It was Natasha, though. Her blood mixed in with the water, and all you could see was a red river flowing down the street. She looked scared. We were 10. We didn't know what happened after you died. Hell, I still don't know. And she was forced to find out, even if she didn't want to find out. I know she didn't. Just like Khalil didn't. My door creaks open and Mama peeks in. She tries to smile. Look who's up. She sinks onto her spot on the bed and touches my forehead, even though I don't have a fever. She takes care of sick kids so much that it's her first instinct. How you feeling, Munch? That nickname. My parents claim I was always munching on something from the moment I got off the bottle. I've lost my big appetite, but I can't lose that nickname. Tired, I say. My voice has extra bass in it. I want to stay in bed.
I know, baby, but I don't want you here by yourself. That's all I want to be, by myself. She stares at me, but it feels like she's looking at who I used to be. Her little girl with ponytails and a snaggle tooth who swore she was a Powerpuff Girl. It's weird, but also kind of like a blanket I want to get wrapped up in. I love you, she says. I love you too. She stands and holds her hand out. Come on, let's get you something to eat. We walk slowly to the kitchen. Black Jesus hangs from the cross in a painting on the hallway wall, and Malcolm X holds a shotgun in a photograph next to him. Nana still complains about those pictures hanging next to each other. We live in her old house. She gave it to my parents after my Uncle Carlos moved her into his humongous house in the suburbs. Uncle Carlos was always uneasy about Nana living by herself in Garden Heights, especially since break-ins and robberies seem to happen more to older folks than anybody. Nana doesn't think she's old, though. She refused to leave, talking about how it was her home and no thugs were going to run her out, not even when somebody broke in and stole her television. About a month after that, Uncle Carlos claimed that he and Aunt Pam needed her help with their kids. Since, according to Nana, Aunt Pam can't cook worth a damn for those poor babies, she finally agreed to move. Our house hasn't lost its Nana-ness, though, with its permanent odor of potpourri, flowered wallpaper, and hints of pink in almost every room. Daddy and Seven are talking before we get to the kitchen. They go silent as soon as we walk in.
Morning, baby girl.
Daddy gets up from the table and kisses my forehead.
You sleep okay?
Yeah, I lie, as he guides me to a seat. Seven just stares. Mama opens the fridge, the door crowded with takeout menus and fruit-shaped magnets. All right, Munch, she says. You want turkey bacon or regular?
Regular?
I'm surprised I have an option. We never have pork. We aren't Muslims. More like Christlums. Mama became a member of Christ Temple Church when she was in Nana's belly. Daddy believes in Black Jesus, but follows the Black Panther's 10-point program more than the Ten Commandments. He agrees with the Nation of Islam on some stuff, but he can't get over the fact that they may have killed Malcolm X.
Pig in my house, Daddy grumbles and sits next to me.
Seven smirks across from him. Seven and Daddy look like one of those age progression pictures they show when somebody's been missing a long time. Throw my little brother Sikani in there, and you have the same person at 8, 17, and 36. They're dark brown, slender, and have thick eyebrows and long eyelashes that almost look feminine. Seven's dreads are long enough to give both bald-headed Daddy and short-haired Sikani each a head full of hair. As for me, it's as if God mixed my parents' skin tones in a paint bucket to get my medium brown complexion. I did inherit Daddy's eyelashes, and I'm cursed with his eyebrows, too. Otherwise, I'm mostly my mom, with big brown eyes and a little too much forehead. Mama passes behind Seven with the bacon and squeezes his shoulder. Thank you for staying with your brother last night so we could... Her voice catches, but the reminder of what happened hangs in the air. She clears her throat. We appreciate it.
No problem. I needed to get out the house. Came spent the night, Daddy asks. More like moved in. Aisha talking about they can be a family. Hey, Daddy says, that's your mama, boy. Don't be calling her by her name like you grown.
Somebody in that house needs to be grown, Mama says. She takes a skillet out and hollers down the hall. Sikani! I'm not telling you again. If you want to go to Carlos's for the weekend, you better get up. You're not going to have me late for work. I guess she's got to work a day shift to make up for last night.
Pops, You know what's going to happen,
Seven says.
He'll beat her. She'll put him out. Then he'll come back saying he changed. Only difference is this time, I'm not letting him put his hands on me. You could always move in with us,
says Daddy.
I know, but I can't leave Kenya and Lyric. That fool's crazy enough to hit them too. He don't care that they're his daughters.
Right,
Daddy says. Don't say anything to him. If he puts his hands on you, let me handle that.
Seven nods, then looks at me. He opens his mouth and keeps it open a while before saying,
I'm sorry about last night, Star.
Somebody finally acknowledges the cloud hanging over the kitchen, which for some reason is like acknowledging me. Thanks, I say. Even though it's weird saying that, I don't deserve the sympathy. Khalil's family does. There's just the sound of bacon crackling and popping in the skillet. It's like a fragile stickers on my forehead, and instead of taking a chance and saying something that might break me, they'd rather say nothing at all. But the silence is the worst. I borrowed your hoodie, Seven, I mumble. It's random, but it's better than nothing. The blue one. Mama had to throw it away. Khalil's blood. I swallow. His blood got on it.
Oh.
That's all anybody says for a minute. Mama turns around to the skillet. Don't make any sense. That baby, she says thickly. He was just a baby. Daddy shakes his head.
That boy never hurt anybody. He didn't deserve that shit.
Why did they shoot him? Seven asks.
Was he a threat or something?
No, I say quietly. I stare at the table. I can feel all of them watching me again. He didn't do anything, I say. We didn't do anything. Khalil didn't even have a gun. Daddy releases a slow breath.
Folks around here gonna lose their minds when they find that out. People from the neighborhood are already talking about it on Twitter,
Seven says.
I saw it last night.
Did they mention your sister? Mama asks.
No. Just R.I.P. Khalil messages, fuck the police, stuff like that. I don't think they know details.
What's gonna happen to me when the details do come out? I ask. What do you mean, baby? My mom asks. Besides the cop, I'm the only person who was there. And you've seen stuff like this. It ends up on national news. People get death threats, cops target them, all kinds of stuff.
I won't let anything happen to you, Daddy says. None of us will.
He looks at Mama and Seven.
We're not telling anybody that Star was there.
Should Sakani know?
Seven asks. No, Mama says. It's best if he didn't. We're just gonna be quiet for now. I've seen it happen over and over again. A black person gets killed just for being black. And all hell breaks loose. I've tweeted RIP hashtags, reblogged pictures on Tumblr, and signed every petition out there. I always said that if I saw it happen to somebody, I would have the loudest voice, making sure the world knew what went down. Now I am that person, and I'm too afraid to speak. I want to stay home and watch The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, my favorite show ever, hands down. I think I know every episode word for word. Yeah, it's hilarious, but it's also like seeing parts of my life on screen. I even relate to the theme song. A couple of gang members who were up to no good made trouble in my neighborhood and killed Natasha. My parents got scared, and although they didn't send me to my aunt and uncle in a rich neighborhood, they sent me to a bougie private school. I just wish I could be myself at Williamson, like Will was himself in Bel-Air. I kinda wanna stay home so I can return Chris's calls, too. After last night, it feels stupid to be mad at him. Or I could call Haley and Maya. Those girls Kenya claims don't count as my friends. I guess I can see why she says that. I never invite them over. Why would I? They live in many mansions. My house is just many. I made the mistake of inviting them to a sleepover in 7th grade. Mama was going to let us do our nails, stay up all night, and eat as much pizza as we wanted. It was going to be as awesome as those weekends we had at Haley's, the ones we still have sometimes. I invited Kenya, too, so I could finally hang out with all three of them at once. Haley didn't come. Her dad didn't want her spending the night in the ghetto. I overheard my parents say that. Maya came, but ended up asking her parents to come get her that night. There was a drive-by around the corner, and the gunshots scared her. That's when I realized Williamson is one world, and Garden Heights is another, and I have to keep them separate. It doesn't matter what I'm thinking about doing today, though. My parents have their own plans for me. Mama tells me I'm going to the store with Daddy. Before Seven leaves for work, he comes to my room in his Best Buy polo and khakis and hugs me.
Love you, he says.
See, that's why I hate it when somebody dies. People do stuff they wouldn't usually do. Even Mama hugs me longer and tighter with more sympathy than just because in it. Sakani, on the other hand, steals bacon off my plate, looks at my phone, and purposely steps on my foot on his way out. I love him for it. I bring a bowl of dog food and leftover bacon outside to our pit bull, Bricks. Daddy gave him his name, 'cause he's always been as heavy as some bricks. Soon as he sees me, he jumps and fights to break free from his chain, and when I get close enough, his hyper butt jumps up my legs, nearly taking me down. Get! I say. He crouches onto the grass and stares up at me, whimpering with wide puppy dog eyes. The Bricks version of an apology. I know pit bulls can be aggressive, but Bricks is a baby most of the time. A big baby. Now, if somebody tries to break in our house or something, they won't meet the baby Bricks. While I feed Bricks and refill his water bowl, Daddy picks bunches of collard greens from his garden. He cuts roses that have blooms as big as my palms. Daddy spends hours out here every night, planting, tilling, and talking. He claims a good garden needs good conversation. About 30 minutes later, we're riding in his truck with the windows down. On the radio, Marvin Gaye asks, "What's going on?" It's still dark out, though the sun peeks through the clouds, and hardly anybody is outside. This early in the morning, it's easy to hear the rumbling of 18-wheelers on the freeway. Daddy hums to Marvin, but he couldn't carry a tune if it came in a box. He's wearing a Lakers jersey and no shirt underneath, revealing tattoos all over his arms. One of my baby photos smiles back at me, permanently etched on his arm with "something to live for, something to die for" written beneath it. Seven and Sakani are on his other arm with the same words beneath them. Love letters in the simplest form.
"You want to talk about last night some more?"
he asks. "Nah."
"Aight. Whenever you want."
Another love letter in the simplest form. We turn onto Marigold Avenue, where Garden Heights is waking up. Some ladies wearing floral headscarves come out the laundromat, carrying big baskets of clothes. Mr. Rubin unlocks the chains on his restaurant. His nephew, Tim, the cook, leans against the wall and wipes sleep from his eyes. Ms. Yvette yawns as she goes in her beauty shop. The lights are on at Top Shelf Spirits and Wine, but they're always on. Daddy parks in front of Carter's Grocery, our family store. Daddy bought it when I was 9, after the former owner, Mr. Wyatt, left Garden Heights to go sit on the beach all day, watching pretty women. Mr. Wyatt's words, not mine. Mr. Wyatt was the only person who would hire Daddy when he got out of prison, and he later said Daddy was the only person he trusted to run the store. Compared to the Walmart on the east side of Garden Heights, our grocery is tiny. White painted metal bars protect the windows and door. They make the store resemble a jail. Mr.